Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we continue our series of conversations with the candidates running for their party's nomination in Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. The open seat, formerly held by current NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine, will have runoff elections on both the Democratic and Republican side on August 28th. This week we're speaking with the Democratic candidates, and next week we'll speak with the Republicans. Yesterday, I spoke with Amanda Douglas, and today my guest is Tim Gilpin, who finished first in the June 26 primary with 34.5% of the vote. Gilpin is a lifelong resident of Tulsa. He's a graduate of George Washington University and the University of Tulsa Law School and is currently practicing law here in the city. He has previously served as an assistant state attorney general under Robert Henry and was appointed to the State Board of Education during Governor Brad Henry's administration. He joins me today to discuss his reasons for running and his priorities if elected. Tim Gilpin, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, it's terrific to be here. What do they say? I'm a longtime listener, and I have the coffee mug collection from Pledge Drives to prove it.
Well, there's one point in your favor already, Tim Gilpin. But before we talk about some issues, what led you to your decision to run for Congress?
Boy, where to start? I got up and ran and gave up my normal life because of what was coming out of Washington. The chaos, the dysfunction, the rudeness out of the Trump administration and out of the Congress. Literally, I sat up and I got engaged on December 31st. And we literally started thinking that there was so much going on that was wrong in Washington and the Trump administration that somebody had to run who had some experience, who had some background in public service that could make a difference and give the people of the First District a good alternative to what was happening.
You mentioned your experience. What experience leads you to be prepared to be a congressman in today's Washington, D.C.?
Boy, in today's Washington, D.C., well, of course, I'm born and bred here in Oklahoma, right here in the 1st District. I've served Oklahoma before. I was an assistant attorney general under Robert Henry some years back. And I'm proud of the 6 years I spent on the Oklahoma State Board of Education, where I really, really worked hard on education policy, good education policy, and against cuts. Towards the end of my term on the State Board of Education, 6 years, we were going through the Great Recession. So there were some hard decisions to be made. And then, of course, the last 3 months of my term, Janet Parisi came in as state superintendent. And I stood up. I stood up to her. And that wasn't easy back then in 2011. But despite that heat, I was dedicated to it. And that's what I'm willing to do now. I'm willing to stand up in Congress.
Let me ask you, if you could accomplish one thing in Congress during your time, if you're elected, what would be that top priority for you?
Sure. I think in the past, we've had very ideologue congressmen from the 1st District in the recent past. My mentor is James R. Jones, and the chair of my campaign. He was a congressman who worked with other people. He was someone who made relationships, who worked hard during the committee work, and brought home the federal funds that made a difference, the tax dollars that you and I have already paid, already come out of our pocket. For instance, I would be super excited and feel like I'd done a good job if I could bring home what we need for economic development zones, more education funding, federal funding from the education bills, more money for SNAP, more of our federal funding for our infrastructure. If I could do that, I think I'd feel like I did a pretty good job.
A lot of times, the ideal way government works, it's about, everybody singing kumbaya, putting your hands across the aisle and finding kindred spirits. There's not much of that in Washington these days. Everybody's really, especially in the House, it's about party discipline. Can you buck the leadership of your own party when you feel like it's in the First District's interest to go a different way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not running, like I said, to be an ideologue. I'm running to get things done. I truly believe that America and the First District are facing very real concrete problems, and it's a time for real solutions. That means I'm willing to work with other people. I'm willing to build relationships, but I'm not going to compromise on the fundamental values and ideals that we hold dear. And that is what government should be doing, which is for the taxes we pay, we have to do a better job on education, a better job on health care, and a better job on our roads and bridges.
What are some of those real problems in the first district in your view?
Well, if you look at a map of the first district, you'll see environmental problems, particularly in the southern end of the first district. Big red dots of environmental disaster areas that haven't been handled. We could talk about our roads and bridges, our infrastructure, that federal dollars should be coming back. But what super interests me is that every year Congress runs an education bill. Every year your U.S. representative should be fighting for our share of those tax dollars to come back to help supplement our district and state budget. For instance, when I was on the State Board of Education, and I took that job super serious, I did the homework. You could tell where we were getting money from through federal grants, federal programs, federal dollars that were coming down through, and how to do it, and how complicated it was, and how serious it was. Well, right now, we don't have a U.S. representative who's doing that for us. We don't have anyone fighting in Congress for our share of those tax dollars. And Oklahoma is very poor in education, very poor in infrastructure, health care, our rural hospitals, and our urban hospitals. That's what I want to do.
Earlier you mentioned SNAP, and I've done a little bit of research on SNAP. Is it a matter of we're leaving dollars on the table for SNAP? And that's basically what people used to call, it's food nutritional supplements is right. What it does. Food stamps is what people...
It used to be called food stamps.
Food stamps. So is it a matter of the state not jumping through the right hoops, or is it a matter of our congressional delegation not advocating for a full allotment of money?
I'm really glad you asked, because recently I've been spending a lot of time on food insecurity issues. In fact, this morning I attended a seminar put on by the Regional Chamber of Commerce on hunger in Tulsa. I didn't have a perfect life growing up. My father died when I was 11. My mom went through a series of problems of depression and I think bouts of alcoholism. I'm not proud of that, but I know what it's like when the cupboard's not full. And it's important to know that 1 in 6 Tulsa residents are food insecure. About almost 19% of Tulsa County residents live in a food desert. Almost 14% of Tulsa County residents receive SNAP benefits. Now, think about that on a public school level. About 80% of our public school kids in the first district are eligible for free or reduced lunch. So what does that mean from a U.S. representative's perspective? We're running a farm bill in the U.S. House. The Republican-passed bill instituted some pretty harsh and detrimental elements in it. Didn't pass the U.S. Senate, thankfully. So there's going to be a conference. For the first time, there was a farm bill that didn't receive a single Democratic vote in the U.S. House of Representatives, and for good reasons. It was unfair. It went too far. It's so important because in that farm bill are the Food Nutrition Supplemental Program funds, are all the other federal nutrition funds, and things that are really important to Oklahoma and the First District because, again, 80% of our kids in school qualify for free and reduced lunch. So as your U.S. representative, my job is to make that farm bill fair, make it efficient, make it work, get it through the U.S. Senate, and get it into law so that all of us in the First District can benefit from that. Because remember, when kids are eating, they can learn better. They are better students. They're better members of our community. And it also returns dollars into our community, too.
And one of the things you said, if you could accomplish one thing, that's bring more money back to the First District.
Sure.
A lot of times that is accomplished under what is, in more recent years, been sort of a controversial practice. They're called earmarks. And that's right. Where the congressman says, it's so much money of this bill is going to go to my district or my area or my state. And they have gotten a bad name, but in many cases, it's an effective way to help a state. Are you in favor of putting earmarks into bills if it's allowed?
It wasn't so long ago that the House rules and the rules, I believe in the Senate too, eliminated earmarks.
Yeah, they're coming back.
Right, and they're coming back. And the idea was that powerful representatives or senators use them for inefficiency and waste. As much inefficiency and waste as there may be, there's also a way to earmark these funds for good, right, for Oklahoma, for our roads, for our schools, for nutrition. You know, I'm going to work the best I can to bring those funds back, whether by earmark or whether by cajoling, arm twisting, or just sitting down on top of somebody. because that's what your representative is supposed to do. It's not really sexy to talk about that, you know, because you talk big issues and people get excited, and I'm happy to do that. But I would feel like a great congressman if I could do that for the first district. I would feel like this is worthwhile. This is worth putting everything else in my life aside if I can accomplish some of that.
My guest today is Tim Gilpin, a local attorney, a former member of the State Board of Education, and a former state assistant attorney general who is seeking the Democratic nomination. The runoff is coming up on August 28th as we talk with the leading candidates for the first congressional district seat. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Let's talk about some of the issues. One of the big hot-button issues in the House has been immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Senate did pass an immigration bill several years ago. It couldn't get through the House at that time, and I think the Senate has said, well, we're going to let the House pass something before we take it up again. And that's where it's been over the last couple of sessions.
Sure.
And you've had everything from discharge petitions to take care of the Dreamers. What is your view on, should we have comprehensive immigration reform? And what is that? What needs to be a makeup of that?
The short answer is yes. Our immigration system and laws are broken. We haven't worked on them since the 1980s under President Reagan. It's time to revisit them. It's time to have an immigration reform system that gives the 11 to 12 million workers, undocumented people in our country, a path to pay their fair share, a path to citizenship, a path to being a recognized part of our communities. Not that they're not already, not that they don't already pay taxes directly and indirectly, because they do, but to address the problem in a way that we begin to solve it. Now on DACA, I support the DACA children. I support a path for them too. And I adamantly oppose separating our families, their families at the border, for a variety of reasons, beyond the simple moral reasons of why that is so wrong. Historically, you can look at why that's so wrong. It's also impractical. It's also incredibly expensive. So that's a system that's not working right now. Yes, I'm going to work to solve that problem. That's one of those real problems we have to have a real solution to.
Let me ask you, if you are able to be a part of a majority that passes a DACA bill and immigration reform,
right
now the Republican leadership, as well as the presidential leadership, has said it has to come with trade-offs for building a wall and severely limiting legal immigration, things like a family member bringing the rest of their family over. What are the lines in the sand that you're not willing to go past to get a DACA bill? Because that's been the holdup from Democrats joining on any sort of immigration bill.
Well, of course, the Republicans right now control both the House, the Senate, and the White House. So they could pass an immigration bill if they wanted to, with or without Democratic support. All right, hot button issue, the wall, right? I see the wall as a political gimmick. I see that as a fear factor to gin up a base. I'd like to be about solutions. I'd like to be about real solutions to real problems. We have walls on our border. We have fences in places. We have natural barrier in places. We have technological security measures on our border. I would rather spend the $50-plus billion that the proposed wall would cost on roads and bridges, on schools, on hospitals, things we know we need. If we're going to solve any problems on our southern border, I don't think it begins with a gigantic wall. What was it? A former Secretary of Homeland Security said, show me a 12-foot wall and I'll show you a 13-foot ladder. The way we're going to solve that problem is by looking at what we have that works and keeping it, and then talking to our neighbors to the south. Before those families reach our border, there are things we can do in our foreign policy and our domestic policy to help address those problems that are bringing those folks to our border. The families, the mothers with children, the violence that they're experiencing, the political instability. That means we're talking to our neighbors to the south. We're not yelling at them.
What about the idea of asylum? This has been one of the big issues. Is what qualifies as asylum has changed. What's your view on that?
Well, there's a set of immigration laws that actually define that. I know in politics we've kind of fudged what asylum is or isn't. There are laws, there are regulations, and there are immigration judges to determine whether an individual is at our border for legitimate asylum reasons, economic immigration, or otherwise. So instead of changing everything, splitting families apart, and taking it from a political perspective, why don't we let our laws work And if we need more immigration judges, let's hire them. If we really need more guards, let's look at that. If we need to juice up the process down in the south of the border so that it's working more efficiently and effectively, let's look at that. But I would need, as your congressman, a real set of standards that need to be met that are really related to security before I would sign on.
Let's talk about health care. The Affordable Care Act is still in effect, but there have been a number of regulatory actions which have weakened some of the protections of the Affordable Care Act. Are you at this point a favor in putting those regulatory pieces back into place, or do you have some ideas of how to better improve health care overall?
Sure. Well, let me start by saying I support the Affordable Health Care Act. In fact, I'm self-employed. My insurance comes through going to that website and picking a health care plan. I think having 20-plus million more people with health insurance is a good thing. And we don't just trash that, take it apart piece by piece, and make all those folks, including myself's health insurance, at risk. Make the rates go high up, as they have for me. What's happened is we've had an administration that said, if I can't destroy it in Congress by legislation, I'm going to take it apart piece by piece that will make it more expensive and make it less accessible to people. I'm against that. I think we should make the Affordable Health Care Act work better. I think we need to improve where we need to improve it and stop trying to take it apart. And I also think we need to look at Medicare, expanding Medicare for all, regardless of age. Medicare is a system that, for all of its pluses and minuses, is working for a lot of people. It also has a problem with funding, because with this latest tax bill that Congress passed, what they've passed actually took 3 years off the solvency of Medicare. That means Medicare is going to be insolvent in 8 years. That's you. That's me. That's a lot of people who are depending on that. So first off, the way we address Medicare is revamp that tax bill. Massive tax breaks for huge corporations are no good. Tax reform should be from the middle out, not the top down. We begin to look at how we expand Medicare for all. If it's going to be someone like me who's 57, I'm going to have to pay a little bit more than, let's say, someone who's 65 to be a part of Medicare and on down the line. Maybe it's an option that somebody can check off and take. But the health care problem isn't going away. And we can't ignore it, and we can't play politics with it anymore.
So when you say Medicare for all, how do you envision that? Much like Medicare is for those ages 65, or a single-payer plan that the government administers, or what exactly?
Well, a lot of people are familiar with Medicare as it is now, with its age limitation. That means we decrease the age eligibility. That's how we start that.
So now, maybe moving it to 62 instead of 65?
Or 57, 59? 55, 50.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or eventually Medicare for all as an option. But here's the deal. If I'm going to take Medicare at age 40, well, then my Medicare premium is going to be more than someone who's age 65 and retired, someone who's age 67 and retired. So we get more people in the system who are paying more than the average retiree that we think of now, and the system lives longer. Also, if we get younger people in it, then the strain will be less. It's not perfect. It's not an easy solution, and there are a lot of details to work out, but we've got to work it out somehow, because health care for all, accessible, affordable, is very important.
My guest today is Tim Gilpin, a local attorney who's seeking the Democratic nomination for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District seat. The runoff is August 28th, and he's my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, let's talk about something that's just come in the news the last few months, and that is what seems to be a burgeoning trade war between America and most of its main trading partners, not just China, but Canada, Mexico, the European Union. Many of its partners were looking at tariffs. What's your view of Congress's role in either acquiescing to those tariffs or voting them down, which Congress has the ability to do?
Sure. Again, I want to look at real problems with real solutions and not gimmicks. Tariffs don't work. Threats of tariffs sometimes as a negotiating tactic can help. Short-term tariffs may be a help. But what we're going through now is going to put not only a damper, but particularly a monkey wrench into the American economy right now. Because if you look historically, when real big tariffs have been in place, our economy suffers and we go into a recession. In fact, some people think that's why we went into the big depression in the 30s, was big tariffs while the economy was booming from the 20s into the 30s. So look, I'm as upset as anybody about manufacturing jobs going somewhere else. My father worked at McDonnell Douglas back when McDonnell Douglas was the big, big thing in town many years ago. So I understand that, but I want everybody to think about the best thing for the economy in the long run. Our economy's transitioning. Jimmy Carter talked about it back in the 70s, that our economy was going to transition. Clinton talked about it. We know that the world or the global market is changing. So we're Americans, we're entrepreneurs, we're thinkers, we're believers, we're doers. We've got to make sure that we're on the cutting edge of the world economy. That includes our manufacturing, that includes technology, that includes whatever's next in the information age. So looking ahead, not backward, is what we need to be doing with our entrepreneurs and our economy.
Now, if, say, an effort came to eliminate the tariffs, you would vote for it?
You know, I would look at exactly what it was and where it hit and how it hit, but I'm not a fan of tariffs.
Okay. Earlier, you mentioned the tax cut that the Republicans passed last year. You know, we're expected to see a much larger budget deficit in this year and in fact, the next couple of years because of the effects of the tax cut. What's your view on either leaving it in place, changing some provisions of it, or eliminating the whole thing?
Okay. I think the tax bill Congress just passed is wrong, wrong-headed, wrong direction, and with the wrong emphasis. This tax bill they passed is going to cost our country $1.5 trillion with a T. Some people estimate it as high as $2 trillion with a T. That adds to the deficit, that adds to the debt. That eventually weakens the economy and closes up the availability of loan money. Interest go up and all that goes with it. All right, so what do we do about that? If we're going to address seriously this problem, we're going to have to look at the overall picture. So let's look at what we can do with taxes that actually benefit the economy. We went through tax breaks in the 80s under Reagan that were from the top down. President Reagan reversed course after a year or two, and the economy was better. In the early 2000s, George W. Bush passed tax breaks from the top down, and we had the greatest recession ever, beginning in 2007, 2008. It's time to reverse course on this tax bill. Yes, the corporate rate was too high, but drastically cutting it costs too much. Yes, investment has to be looked at as best as the tax bill can address. But what makes the economic American engine work is taxes and benefits that are from the middle out. For instance, better tax breaks for college expenditures, better tax breaks for the average person, earned income, and things of those sort.
That include things like vocational training and things like
yes,
that?
Yes, yes, of course.
Any sort of education?
Yes, of course. That's what generates the American economy. That's what generates growth from the middle out. Remember, it's the people who were buying those washing machines, those cars, that furniture, that house. That's who's building the economy. Now, if we're continuing to give huge tax breaks to massive corporations, I think we're just going to see more share buyback deals that don't generate more income in the economy.
Let me ask you, one of the duties of any member of the House of Representatives is the power to bring charges of impeachment. And
what
so,
would you think about that?
Yeah, so I'm going to say philosophically first. What is your view on the impeachment of public officials? When should it be used? When should it not be used?
Sure. It's no secret that we're living in very peculiar times. It's no secret there are grave issues right on our doorstep. That's one really good reason why I'm running. The cat's out of the bag. You know, my thought is, in the Trump instance, we let the special counsel's investigation continue unimpeded. We let that reach its natural and full conclusion, and then I will look at the evidence and I'll make a decision on where it goes from there. Not before, but I have strong feelings about the issues that we're facing right now and strong fears like a lot of people. I mean, I don't know how you could walk around and listen to the news and not be concerned, but we have to see the evidence and we move on from there. Impeachment is as serious a thing as our country can do. We look at it with a sober, level head, but a serious one.
If you are elected as a Democratic congressman from Oklahoma's 1st District,
sure.
You know, if this is the way the crystal ball goes, it's very possible you'll be looking at a Democratic majority.
Uh-huh.
As a freshman congressman, what should be the Democratic leadership in Congress's first priorities, say, within the first 6 months of the next Congress?
Boy, you know, the world keeps changing every single day. You can't turn on the news and not see something that shocks you or upsets you. So what's going to be happening come January 2019? It's tough to say. But for me, I'm going to go to Congress to do a sober, serious job. I'm going to do my homework. I'm going to make relationships and serve on committees and do the committee work and hopefully gain the respect of my colleagues. I'm going to do the best I can to be the best congressman this district has ever seen. And that means a lot of work. You know, some folks don't realize, but being a congressman isn't very glamorous. You know, there aren't any bands playing for congressmen or women. There aren't any songs being played. It's a lot of daily grind out work if you're doing it right, if you're doing the homework, if you're making relationships, if you're going to your committee meetings. And that's what's going to return us to public service of the highest order. And that's what's going to be a benefit to the First District.
Our time is just about up. I'm going to give you a chance to, you sort of made a summation there, but I'll, Tim Gilpin, I'll allow you to have another word. Why should folks vote for you on August 28th in the Democratic runoff?
First off, thanks for doing this. I'm a big fan of KWGS. Like I said, I have the collection of mugs. We live in serious times, grave times. November, too much is at stake. Too much is at stake to take any of it lightly. Too much is at stake to elect another ideologue who's concerned about him or herself and just their career. You know, I think I should be your next congressman, because I've done the homework. I've got serious thoughts about the serious problems we have. I've got positions. I've got a record. I support education. I support good, accessible health care. I support sensible gun reform. Why can't we have effective background checks that all 50 states report into, including the military? Because we don't have that right now. Why can't we have a tax plan that's fair to the middle and working class? Why can't we have respect? Why can't we have genuine decency in our federal government again? Because it's a lot of hard work, and I'm willing to do it, and I'm happy to do it.
Tim Gilpin, thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Tim Gilpin is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Oklahoma's 1st Congressional District. You can find out more about his candidacy at gilpinforcongress.com. That's Gilpin, the number 4, congress.com. Yesterday, we spoke with his opponent in the August 28th primary, Amanda Douglas, and you can hear that conversation in its entirety, as well as today's conversation, at the Studio Tulsa section of publicradiotulsa.org. We'll continue our series on the first district candidates with Republicans next week. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.